Hello and welcome to the BGCP Dissemble Podcast, the official podcast for the Big Glasgow Comic Page, where we talk about the latest comics, movies, television, and other pieces of nerd culture. I'm your host for this episode, Massimo Castelli, and today I am joined by, well, back from a small hiatus, the lovely Daniel Boyd.
Massimo, how are you doing?
Absolutely hanging, it's great. And today on a podcast first, we're making his debut on the podcast because we love having new hosts that maybe make one or two appearances, and let's see how that goes.
Unless we're not assholes and leave.
Exactly. It's Chris. It's Chrissy.
Oh, thank you very much. I just noticed, is your name Italian?
Yes, it is.
Aye. Oh, mate. I might be getting an Italian passport. Me and you could go to Italy again.
There we go. I've got an Italian passport
as well. Wait, why are you getting an Italian passport, Jesse?
Oh, no, it's a long story.
I'm sure that is. You can tell me later. That always is with you.
Somehow I'm getting an Italian passport. I'm like excited for it, but Jesus, I don't know what Christ. That means.
Of course.
Speak Italian?
Who knows?
What?
Anyway, on today's episode, we'll be talking about, the main kind of topic of this episode is things you're kind of glad to be wrong about. So films, comics, TV, media that you thought was going to be absolutely dog shite and ended up actually being good or fantastic. Good or fantastic, I guess, is the bar here. Because, you know, not everything can be a 10 out of 10. Sometimes it just has to be better than thought.
And if you think something was going to be shit and then it was just meh, then we don't want to know. Like, it has to at least be good.
It has to hit a threshold. Anyway. But yeah, no, that's kind of the main thing. As always, we'll be talking about the news. And obviously some of the websites some of the articles from the website will also be mentioned as well, probably throughout that. Regardless of that, I think we should just jump right into the topic.
Let's jump like a car bonnet.
What's some of the stuff that you thought was going to be absolutely horrendous?
Right.
It'd be pretty good.
Well, the reason that I kind of put this topic out there was because I went to see Suicide Squad on Friday night. And I was expecting it to be garbage. And I think I'll do a wee kind of mini review of that after we do our discussion, so I'll not say any more about that now. But the first Suicide Squad, obviously, was a massive letdown. I will say this one was better. But we'll talk more about that later. For films that I thought were going to be garbage that were brilliant, who expected Mad Max Fury Road to be as good as it was? Did anybody see that coming?
I thought that was
another Mad Max film, I don't know, man. And then I seen the trailer and I was like, oof, that's what's quality. And then I seen the behind the scenes stuff, how they were doing all the stunts for real, like with prop cars and stuff. And I was like, oh, I'm into this. And then I went to see it and I was like, that was amazing. I love that film.
That's what blew my mind. Is that I think a lot of the fact of reliance on practical effects really helped that film excel, because see if it just been CGI bullshit, like half the Fast and Furious stuff.
Yeah.
It would have completely probably fell on its ass and failed.
The one kind of major CGI part of that film is the storm, and that looks amazing. Like, that sandstorm scene, I think, looks incredible. And then all the practical effects with the explosions and the flipping and the guys going and fucking, what they call it, like the big javelin pulls from one cut another, with all their shit blown up. Like, it's just awesome, man. It's a pure feast of the eyes. I love that film.
I think it's also, like, the experience for George Miller, though. Like, he's coming back.
The thing is, that's something that, you know, I'm Mr. Cynical over here.
That makes a change, doesn't it?
I have wondered if that was a fluke. Like, see if you watch Mad Max 2 and 3, you're like, ugh. And I don't know, man, I hope I'm wrong. Like, again, talking about being wrong and being surprised, I hope I'm surprisingly wrong when they bring out, I know they're doing a Furiosa movie, and is it with Anya Taylor-Joy? Is that right?
That's a good question.
But they're doing a Fury Road spin-off as well. I hope that's good, because Fury Road was awesome. And I loved that. It's like, there's so much weird world building in that film. Like, see the bit at night time when you look out and it's on a kind of blue horizon, and you see these things, the big stilts walking across, and you're like, what the hell are they? Like, there's just so much, I don't know, like, vague, cool stuff in that movie that you're like, oh, that's cool. Well, I hope we get to see that in, like, a comic or a TV show later. I don't know, it's... Yeah, really good film.
I think I definitely agree with you, though, as well, that, like, I was not super familiar with Mad Max before going to see Fury Road. Mm. But I definitely thought, I went to see it in the cinema, I think I went to see it in IMAX.
And it was just one of those it's a film experience, I guess. Like, definitely say, I don't feel like it's a great film, obviously, and it was a lot better than people expected. But I don't think it feels like it holds up.
Really?
Smaller screens.
Oh no, I've watched it a few times since then. Still,
I don't know. See, if you watch it on a bigger screen, though, it's a different experience. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, I definitely will watch it, but at the same time, it is that visceral kind of.
Well, get a projector.
That's very true.
No, I don't know. Mad Max 1 was pretty good. Mad Max 2 was okay. Mad Max 3 was garbage. So yeah, I didn't have any kind of hype for 4, but no, it was good.
There you go. I mean, it's always
positive. Tom Hardy's great, even though him and Charlize Theron apparently hated each other. They were both really good in the movie.
So. I heard that. They didn't know what you like. I think that's why they're doing separate movies.
Probably part of the reason. It's a shame because their chemistry in the film was brilliant. And to be fair, I think a lot of people have said their real life kind of indifference towards each other actually helped the characters in the movie kind of build that somewhat relationship, probably fed off it a wee bit.
That kind of animosity that kind of then turns into kind of something more than that.
Yeah.
So, Chrissy, what about yourself? What's something that you kind of.
I was going to pick a more personal film. I think it's like Sicario.
Sicario?
Sicario.
With Al Pacino.
No,
Josh Brolin,
and I can't even pronounce the guy's name.
Sicario is Denis Villeneuve's movie with Benicio del Toro and Josh Brolin and Emily Blunt.
I thought when I walked into that, I was like, John Bernthal. It would be a regular kind of heist, boring thing. But actually, it was really entertaining, quite emotional at some bits. And like, I loved De Toro's character. It's like kind of the Batman version of the gang video. Like, he's dead in dark all the time. Standing at the back, no saying much, but he's like the heart of the movie. It's like, okay. I mean, it's not a blockbuster whatsoever, but it's just a really nice wee movie.
Sicario is a phenomenal film. To be fair, I was expecting that to be good because it's Denis Villeneuve, but Denis Villeneuve's last movie was Prisoners, and that I didn't expect to be anything special. Have you seen Prisoners with Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal?
That's why.
I didn't expect that to be anything, That's one of my favourite films, and Taunt the Suicide Squad, David Dufmashin also is phenomenal in that film. Prisoners is great, so that kind of surprised me, but I was kind of expecting Sicario to be good because it was a follow-up. That was Denis Villeneuve's next film. Speaking of Denis Villeneuve, I just reviewed Blade Runner 2049 for the website.
Yeah, there you go.
I reviewed Blade Runner 1 and Blade Runner 2049. The reason being, Denis Villeneuve's Dune movie is coming out in like 2 months, 3 months.
Is he behind Dune?
I've
seen
books. He's one of the few filmmakers that I don't think has made a bad film. Like, see, if you look at his filmography, it's like Prisoners, Sicario, Arrival, Blade Runner 2049. Like, he's had some track record.
Yeah, I'll be honest. See, me and Ian talked about this last week. Neither of us are that excited for Dune because we don't really have nostalgia for it. But since it's a Denis Villeneuve film,
the trailer looks cool, man.
Aye. That kind of thing. I might actually push me to go see it more.
The original shouldn't have been a David Lynch film. Because I love David Lynch, but the original shouldn't have been him. Like, it should have been.
To be honest,
who watches Wild at Heart or Mulholland Drive or Twin Peaks and goes, that guy can do Dune? Like, what? No, that was a bad decision. Like,
it's not a good one.
So, yeah.
That's another thing. He was actually offered to do Star Wars.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. Yeah, imagine trippy David Lynch Star Wars. I'd bet that.
I would think that would be really
highly psychedelic. Fucking.
yeah. But you could have him go to a planet and like touch a dodgy plant, and then just the whole film is just a pure trip. Just a razor head, like radiator babies and all that. Like, just mental.
Man.
He could take it in a whole different direction. He could take it even weirder. Than the current, like, is it John Favreau? He's kind of making it mellow.
Listen, all I'll say is do not mess with Favreau's moment in Star Wars because he's been doing better than anyone else has for the last 20 years.
Oh, yeah, anyone, yeah.
Okay. He's out Star Wars, Lucas, J.J. Abrams, what's his name, Ryan Johnson. Let Favreau do it. Favreau, Filoni, just let them do it. Don't mess with the formula.
Don't interfere with the studio, because last time he did that, we got Iron Man 2, right?
Exactly.
Cam.
And then Chef.
Chef, fantastic film, by the way. Phenomenal film.
My name is Chef.
My name is Chef. that's a great film. Not
Yeah, sorry.
Really?
Courtney loves it. Nah.
I love Chef. But in terms of films that I thought that were going to be terrible, that when they first came out, so this is always a tough one, right? And you always like to say when you watch your big MCUs, you think, oh, Marvel always going to hit it with the block with every single thing they do.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll be honest, Guardians of the Galaxy, like, I want to go see that in the cinema because it was a Marvel film, but I had no connection to it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, you sit, you maybe watch it, you see the trailer for it, it's like, okay, looks kind of cool, it's by the guy who wrote both the Scooby-Doo films, he's directing. And it's like, okay, this could be all right. And then you go in and you get a completely different experience. You get this phenomenal, like, I don't even know what to call it. It's like just bombastic fucking space adventure that introduces the cosmic side of the MCU that completely blew the doors off of anything that we'd seen before. To that point, it was just people fighting through cities and destroying cities and fighting evil robots and doing shit like that. And then we actually got a film where it was just a group of extraterrestrial people. Just fighting off against a big bad.
I can't really say too much of this because I don't really like the first Guardians film. But
what?
Nah,
that's insulting.
There we go. That's another list that Dan doesn't like.
It ends with a dance off. Like, come on.
That's the way you want to do it.
Like the whole film. The start of the film is just kind of mediocre, right? And then you get to the prison scene, and it's like, oh, I need to steal a leg. It's pure funny, mate. Like, what shite part is that? And then they escape the mad prison, and then they'd have a dance off with like this mad blue guy, and then the group's like, oh, I'm going to blow myself up, and then it just ends. You're like, what a mediocre movie. Like, nah, it's alright. Like, it's fine. The second one is better.
I don't know.
Simply for the reason that the intro was quality. See, the intro with Groot dancing as a blue sky, that sequence is amazing. I'll no shut up for that sequence. It's one of my favourite intros. I'll even watch one. Aye, that's so good. So, aye, the second one's better. But
I don't know.
Honestly, you were talking about like how James Gunn kind of going in was an unknown kind of thing, I think, to you. But I kind of knew a bit about him. I'd seen Super and a few of his other movies. Mm-hmm. And I've never been a fan of James Gunn. I've always thought he's a bit creepy and a bit off. And like, see, when all the tweets came out, I was like, I am not surprised that he's probably an once. Like, not shocked at all.
He's an absolute beast.
Aye. Guy looks like a pedo is a pedo. Oh, I'm shocked. Oh. What a surprise. Aye. So I've never really been a fan of James Gunn. But hey, he's bouncing back with Suicide Squad. So let's just see what happens.
Other than Dan's opinion, I'm actually really a big fan of Guardians. I really do like it. And I think it opens up a lot of doors into the MCU in general that kind of weren't accessible before, that people thought were kind of off limits because no one thought they could be done in film.
Something else I hate. I don't like Chris Pratt. I've never liked Chris Pratt. I think he's extremely unfunny and thinks he's funnier than he is. And he's got this whole cocky thing that just pisses me off. He's up there with James Corden for me.
Right, let's move on before Dan picks up one of the MCU fandom by saying something else more controversial.
Listen, Star-Lord messed up Infinity War, right? Everybody should hate him.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, but...
See, to be honest, I think the movie before that was called Movie 43.
Oh, Movie 43, what a movie!
That was... Oh, did you like that movie?
No, it's so bad.
It's so
bad. What did you say, Dan? See if you liked it.
I love the story behind it. Like, do you know why that got made? The filmmakers had, like, scandalous stories on all these celebrities. Like, they like, hacked their emails, and they had all these, like, trouble cheating on their buds. Some of them were, like, had money laundering things. Like, there was all sorts of, like, dirt that these filmmakers had, and that's how they got Kate Winslet, Hugh Jackman, all these massive actors to be in this terrible film. That's such a good story. It's so funny. Like, imagine blackmailing Hollywood A-listers into a bad movie. That's amazing. Like,
but that was his movie before they made Guardians. So.
Oh, James Gunn has something to do with that. Yeah, he did. He wrote that or something.
I think
the guy I'm talking about had all the dirt. I think that was the director. You can Google it. It's all on the internet, but it's fascinating, man.
But if you just watch that and then you got that kind of property from Marvel is not the kind of the same level as Suicide Squad. I would say in the comics bit. So when it got announced. Yeah. It's kind of not knowing. It's like, who the bunch of these random, a raccoon, the fuck? So you're like, okay, but you're okay with Harley and the Suicide Squad because they're more well-known, kind of all round characters. So when you kind of jump into an unknown world, you're like, oh shit.
I mean, with that, Chrissy as well, comes the thing of a bunch of characters just got rewrote into their movie versions.
Yeah.
Like, Drax got rewrote basically into being his movie version. Peter Quill, Star-Lord, also got rewrote. Yondu. Most of the team that was appeared in Guardians became the Guardians comics team, even though they had not that much to do with them in the first place.
But that was something that also made me prefer the second Guardians film. I didn't like just a big tree that said, "I am Groot," over and over again. I was like, that's dumb. So at the end, I was actually like, thank God they blew him up and made him into a baby, because it made it more interesting.
A baby tree?
That's so much more interesting than just a big guy that says, "I am Groot." Who cares?
I wanted to get away from this before I really cut off, but
nah.
You keep digging the hole.
Listen, it's fair. Like what you like, right? I don't like it, but you like what you like.
You don't like most things, Dan.
No, I don't.
So don't follow his suit. I was going to say,
if you guys are still going, then go for it, but I just thought of one.
I want to hear what
that's one's on left field, right? It's not to do with comics, right? When I was in college, right, there was a boy in my class, I'll not name him, just in case he's an off chance he hears this. brand new guy, right, lovely guy, right, but weird, right? He liked some stuff beyond that, right? He was a bit of a stoner. And he also liked anime, which, to be fair, a lot of folk in my area liked anime. I fucking hate anime.
Oh, yeah.
So he was into all that mad, like, yeah, stuff. So he recommended this show, Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And I'm like, I don't know, man, like this anime-loving stoners tell me to watch this show. Is this going to be garbage? So I actually put it off for like a year. And then I get around to it, and that is one of my favourite shows I've ever seen now. Like, I've watched that, remember in college, like 5 years ago? I've watched that like 20 times over the last 5 years. Like,
I've got a hot take with Always Unavailable for that. All of my mates really love it.
Right.
I just don't. I've watched a few episodes, I just don't really.
Right, when you say you've watched a few episodes, did you start at the start?
I watched the first two seasons. And because.
Oh, you actually dropped off at the worst time. Season 3 is when it really picks up, honestly. Season 3 and 7, I think, are the best. They're all great, but they're probably the two best seasons. But
that's the thing, though, see when you're given the thing of, oh, after the first three seasons, it gets really fucking good.
I agree, right? I hate that. Do you know what I used to hate? People that used to say, oh, Final Fantasy gets good after the first 10 hours. I'm going to play 10 hours or something I hate. Go away. Why would you even say that? So I don't want to sound like a hypocrite, but Danny DeVito comes into Always Sunny in season 2. And for that point on, it does get funnier. If it's not your thing, it's not your thing. Courtney hates it because she said it's just people shouting. But I genuinely think the reason as well I didn't want to go into it, I normally hate American comedy. Like, see when he recommended it, I was expecting something like The Big Bang Theory or 2.5 Men. It's so much funnier than that. Like, it blows them out the water.
Well, see, I love like shows like Community. It's one of my favourite shows of all time. I really like that. I don't know. In my personal opinion, I think it's.
I know that's where our thingy came from, the Russos, right?
Aye, the Russo's both on Community, and also the guy who directs Fast and Furious, what's his name?
Justin Lin?
Justin Lin directed a few episodes. He directed one of my favourite episodes, which is, I think, it's the paintball special. I don't know if you've ever seen Community.
Seen that,
basically, at the end of the first two seasons, they have this episode where it becomes into one massive paintball tournament. Mm. Really, really good writing and really well done, and the Russo's done those episodes as well. As well as Justin Long. But yeah, no, I just always feel in Philadelphia, one of those things I never could get into, but maybe I might give it a watch later on, because my mates are really into it, and I do love Danny DeVito and a lot of
Massimo, it must be something being Italian, because I watched 8 seasons of it, and...
Are you claiming to be Italian? you're the whitest person I know.
Just everyone after the
he's doing this because he thinks it makes him more Italian.
I was actually trying to get like an Italian strip or something.
Everyone after the Euros in Scotland wants to be fucking Italian.
Well, that's true. Is that why you got a passport?
Exactly.
That's good. Right, sorry, go on.
No, but I don't know why I stopped watching it, but like I do agree, like it's kind of like it's a smooth ride to watch. It's 20 minutes and you can't, it's like you can put it on and just forget and just watch and watch. And that's what I love about it. But when Danny DeVito came in, it did take it up another level. So I would say the first two seasons are a wee bit okay. They're okay. When DeVito came in,
I really finds the street. And there are some
DeVito era.
There's some really highly episodes. See Matt Shackman that did WandaVision. He directs an episode, I think it's in season 7-ish, called Charlie Work, and it's like Birdman. Like, the whole thing is one shot, and it's the health inspector's coming to the bar, and Charlie has to, like, clean the whole bar, and they've got a mad scheme going on with, like, rubbing chickens up with booze and then causing disease and selling it back, or some mad scheme. And, like, he has to deal with that while this health inspector's coming, and it's all done in one shot, and it's honestly some of the best TV I've ever seen. Like, it's hilarious, but it's also really well done. You're like, this is weird. But yeah, that was Matt Shackman that did WandaVision, so.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
I would
solid
recommend
show,
it. Like, try and jump
into
it. Like, if you like,
and I think Charlie Day is a genius. I really do. I like Rob McElhenney and Glenn Hurton as well, but I think Charlie Day, I think with Charlie Day, you don't even think he's as clever as he is, but because he plays it dumb. But see some of the things that comes to Baby Man, he's a comedic genius. Like, his time is amazing. He's really, really funny.
Well, I might have to give it a rewatch then at some point just to dip my toe back in the water with it. But in terms of, I know obviously we're a big comic book podcast and all that stuff.
Yeah, let's get back to that maybe.
As much as we love Always Sunny in Philadelphia, we've got to get back to it in some capacity.
Yeah.
So one of my ones that I definitely didn't think was going to be nearly as good as it was, and I thought it was going to be meh, was In It the Spider-Verse. Because I didn't think that, because Sony are so hit and miss with their Spider-Man properties, that I thought it was just keeping one of those things where it's like, alright, so it's Sony basically trying to retain the rights to Spider-Man by producing another thing related to it. Like, Venom was okay to terrible.
Review on the website.
There you go. Obviously, your first Amazing Spider-Man films, I like the first Amazing Spider-Man, the second one's pretty shit, and then I like the first two Tobey Maguire Spider-Man films, and the third
review
one.
For the Amazing Spider-Man game on the website, right. Amazing Spider-Man 2 game on the website. There you go.
But yeah, no, I was thinking it was another kind of cash grab from Sony to be like, okay, we're now going to do it animated, and how wrong I was. I fucking adore that film. I think it's amazing. It's one of the best animated films of the past 20 years, so long, that's not been produced by obviously like Disney or kind of DreamWorks or whatever. But honestly, yeah, no, I was incredibly surprised with how good that film was, and I still think it holds up. It'll hold up for another 20 years on top of this, just the way it's shot and the way it's done.
Guess what?
What?
I'm not a fan.
Listen, this one
here, I know that I'm the minority, right? But this one here, I think it was too hyped up. Like, it came out, and I saw the trailers, and I was like, it's got a pig, and like, nah, it's too dumb for me, right? And then it came out, and somebody was like, oh, you're an animator, you need to watch this, because it's got all these different animation styles that they mesh, and it works really well, and I'm like, right, okay. And then I just never got around to it. And then, it wasn't that long ago, I think it was all about 6 months ago, we were watching Cody's Nieces, and we're looking for a kids film to put on, and I've not seen, and Spider-Verse I put it on, and honestly, that's what I got out of it. It was an okay kids film. That's kind of how I seen it. It's okay, but
this is the most wrong you've been about anything, Dan.
However, I will go to bat on other Lord & Miller properties. I think Tottenham movies that you expect to be crap and were great. I think Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and the Lego Movie are both better than Spider-Verse. Like, if I had to watch one of them, I'd watch either of them before Spider-Verse.
Personally, in my opinion, it probably goes Lego Movie, then Spider-Verse, then Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, because Lord & Miller are fantastic filmmakers. And
yeah.
One of the things is, like, what I found out, because I found out it was the guys behind the Lego Movie who were making it, I'm like, okay, this film actually has a chance of being good and not being a terrible cash grab.
Yeah.
And I still stand by, in my opinion, to be one of the best interpretations of a super slubby, awesome Peter Parker and stuff, but
people love it. Like, I know that I am the minority, and people will be telling me that I'm wrong. But yeah, that's just what I got for it. I wanted to enjoy it. I just, it's fine.
See, but it opened up the whole. That was the first. That the way I look at it, like, the Spider-Man animations have always been really good. Well, when I grew up, it was always really good. So I was really excited for this. But also, it opens up the multiverse.
See,
I don't think that actually happened, did it?
Well, what I liked about it, like, I really liked the character of Miles Morales, and I really liked the fact that we were getting a Miles Morales on screen for the first time. Mm-hmm. But I feel like in my opinion, the whole multiverse thing somewhat detracted from just a good Miles Morales film.
I don't. I think it arguably makes it, because it arguably it introduced audiences to the concept of a multiverse. Because a lot of superhero movies have been, like, Marvel have been tiptoeing around the multiverse.
I wonder if that should have been its own thing, though, separate from the Miles Morales film. I don't know.
I mean, true.
Do you know what? I'm clearly wrong. Everybody else, like, agrees with you guys. So I'm not going to, like, fight for it too much or try to change your mind, but that's just...
It's
that's
a debate,
just.
That. It's a discussion topic.
No, I know, but I just know that I'm not going to win anybody over. it's not for me.
That's entirely fair, honestly. But yeah, no, Lego Movie's another one as well that, again, thought was going to be terrible. And
yeah, same.
So do you like Chris Pratt in that film, do you?
No.
No.
Worst part of that movie. I'm so glad you don't see his whiny, annoying face in that film, man. That's the one benefit. You don't see his dumb eyes. Like, I hate his face. I hate everything about him, man. Yeah, not a fan. Chris Pratt. Whatsoever.
If Chris Pratt, if you're listening to this out there, aren't they?
Yeah, yes, what for that of you, mate?
Please.
Do you know what would happen? Yeah. Do you know what happened? He's so much more like camera ready and wittier than me that he would actually make like take the piss out of me. Like, have you seen that interview that Ricky Gervais did with Gary Shandling? Ricky Gervais has always been known for like ripping people apart and like taking the piss out of people. Once this is done, YouTube Ricky Gervais and Gary Shandling interview. Gary Shandling, Ricky Gervais is Ricky Gervais. It's so good. He pure takes it down a peg without even trying. Yeah, it's really good. That's what would happen if we had Chris Pratt. I'd be like, I'm going to rip this guy apart, and he'd totally rip me apart, man.
You have to be, like, especially, he's like, Ricky Gervais is Ricky, so he's like a dark comedian. So, you know.
I'm not comparing myself to Ricky Gervais here, by the way, just so clear. As much as I'd love to, like, say that I did that Golden Globe speech, that wasn't me, so.
We just tweet him and mention, say we mentioned the podcast, and he tells the fuck off.
he did know usually I don't say he started podcasting and that fucking probably.
Yeah, but he did before I did abroad, he did what's it called?
Him, Stephen Merchant,
the animated one,
Carl Pilkington.
Carl Pilkington, and that was pretty big. That was
so we could say, you know, we are a podcast, come on. That's it, no other context. Just exactly. See what happens.
Has Indy got any more things that surprise you?
I go in as an optimist.
See, I used to do that, and do you know when I think I was broken? Batman v Superman. I think that was a movie that I was like, this is too big to fail. Like, I know that Man of Steel was so good parts and bad parts, but listen, how can you put Batman and Superman in the same film together and make it bad? You can't do it. Oh, review for that on the website too. That was the point that broke me.
So I think, okay, so here's one as well, right? And we talked about this last, me and Ian talked about this last week in terms of reboots. I honestly thought Secret Wars was going to be terrible. That was the Marvel comic, the reboot comic
that came out,
that basically rebooted the universe.
Oh, thank God we got a comic in there.
Yeah, I might as well get a comic in there. So we were talking about this last week in terms of like reboot comics and stuff like that. Secret Wars was basically, for those who don't know, was an event book that came out was it almost 10 years ago now?
Yeah, more than that, right? It's not 2004? Am I wrong?
No. I'm talking about the reboot, the Secret Wars, the one where Doctor Doom becomes God and all that.
Like 2013?
2013, so like almost a decade.
Been about there? That one was okay. Yeah, it was okay.
Jesus Christ, Dan. Sorry,
man.
I thought that film was going to be terrible. The comic was going to be terrible even, sorry. But I honestly really enjoyed it, and I thought that they did a great job of basically condensing down the Marvel Universe at the time, which was kind of overblown and stuff like that, and actually making it interesting and fun. And there was quite a few good comics that stand out of that, although the Marvel comic landscape at the moment is completely shot to bits, because they like to have an event book every 2 to 3 years, whether that be Kenner Black or whatever basic one they're doing now.
I like Kenner Black.
Kenner Black's like solid, but like again, because there's an event book every 3-4
years. Review the website.
Every 3-4 years, it just means that I always feel like event books don't have the same impact as normally they would.
Sure.
Because they're like,
yeah, totally.
A dozen. Oh, right,
there is such a thing as too much of a good thing.
Like, the whole thing that happened recently with the Secret Identities or whatever it was called, the whole thing. Secret Origins, whatever it was, where they basically redone a bunch of the Origins and there's a whole thing.
And then they're doing this one, is it Dark Ages?
Dark Ages.
That's an event book, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's coming out next year, and it's like the power... Tom
Taylor, right?
Yeah, Tom Taylor. MCU, Blizzard Power, and how the heroes affect that. And I get it, right? There's always supposed to be a world-ending event in the MCU because of how many cosmic deaths, but fuck Jesus. Just lay off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But... I still stand by Secret Wars being a fantastic comic that introduced stuff like the Thor Corps, introduced Miles Morales into the main 616 universe, had old man Logan come into the 616 universe as well, reintroducing some kind of the like Molecule Man and stuff like that, some other, like, other characters. There was that one of my favourite panels of comics ever was when Black Panther uses an Infinity Gauntlet to raise an army of the dead. It's fucking awesome. You should look it up if you haven't seen it. It's phenomenal. Great art by I can't remember who the artist was in the book, but it's still fantastic. But in my opinion, one of those comic books that I still think holds up today and was in a great event book at the time, even though, you know, Marvel felt was almost, or Marvel Comics was almost on its last legs, whereas the films kind of taken up.
Sure.
I was just going to jump in with another comic kind of thing. Like, I read it when I was younger, and it was called I think it was when the Batman Arkham Asylum games were out.
Mm-hmm.
And the comic is actually called Arkham Asylum.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's by, I think it was the Grant Morrison.
All right. You're talking about A Serious House on Serious Earth?
Aye. So I think it might have been his first book.
It was probably maybe his first DC book. It was early in Grant Morrison's career. Yeah.
Aye. So I was like, okay, let's give this a read. And then got like at the first, like, I'm dyslexic, so I just like looked at the photos sometimes. And then try to get the story from the photo. And I was like, oh, fuck, this is, like, psychedelic and fucking dark as shit.
Yeah.
It's a very dark comic. And, like, when you're, like, say, like, 15, you're like, okay, just watch it and, like, see what happens. But I reread it recently, and, my God, I totally had a different perspective then. I was like, this is fucking amazing. Like, it goes really deep into psychosis and all that. And, like, the actual drawings are scary when you look at them. You're like, this guy's reading me this.
Dave McKean's artwork in that book is insane. Like, see his Joker, it's...
That is the most terrifying thing.
It's like, awesome. I love
what
it.
What the fuck?
It's probably creepier than Jock's Joker, and Jock's Joker's pretty creepy too. It's a really, really cool version of that character.
Horrifying. I'm just looking at the Joker then now. Jesus Christ.
And the things he says, like, I think they really played in that book on the whole Joker being in love with Batman thing. Like, there is like a weird kind of sexual tension, like a kind of predatory kind of, I don't know, just something really off-putting that makes your skin crawl. But it's so well written, and because it's Grant Morrison and kind of, like, you know, they always understand like how that kind of thing works in comics. I feel like Grant Morrison always knows how far to push it without it being too far. Like, that's Frank Miller's problem and Mark Miller's problem, I think. They always push it too far. Whereas Grant Morrison does it to a point and then pulls it back, and I think that's what puts Grant Morrison in the guys. I don't know.
I was going to say, speaking of Grant Morrison, see, one of the ones that I actually liked, I didn't think I was going to like, was Return of Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, okay.
Return of Bruce Wayne's fantastic. So it's basically written by Morrison, and it takes place after, is it Final Crisis?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that was Grant Morrison too.
Yes.
Because it was Batman R.I.P., now Final Crisis, and then
Batman
Battle for the Cool.
By Doom. He basically, he shoots, by the way, sick ass day of Batman using a gun to shoot fucking Darkseid with an anti-life equation bullet, like, just iconic.
But game, like. I've never had a problem with that. Like, I don't know, it's not a real gun, and Darkseid's not technically a person, so it's fine.
Fair. But it's such an iconic shot, though, and then obviously Batman's skeleton showing up in that. But that Return of Bruce Wayne is fantastic. I need to probably reread it because I haven't read it about. In a while,
yeah.
But I need to reread it because I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it a lot more. I thought I did because it's like, oh, cool. I mean, when you're a kid or when I was quite younger, you don't realize. Oh, it's a Batman comic. I actually got it from a local library. That's how I started reading that. It was like, oh, it's one of the only ones they had, and I was like, okay, I guess it looks okay. I'm not the biggest Batman fan, you know. I'm always more of a Superman fan, a Flash fan, that kind of stuff. I know.
Oh my God! We're
not
Italian blood anymore.
I shunned you from the family.
What disgrace! I wasn't always the biggest Batman fan, but I feel like Return of Bruce Wayne definitely put me on to liking Batman a lot more, especially because it has a rotating set of artists.
Yeah,
throughout the run. So it's I think it's a 6 or 7 issue series. I can't quite remember. It's a pain in the ear. Six issue series. Written by Morrison, and it's basically he's basically Batman has to overcome amnesia and history itself, and basically in order to make his way through time to get back to present day Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
So you get Pirate Batman, Caveman Batman, Cowboy Batman. It's honestly
that sounds fucking mental.
You should really read it. Like,
listen, Grant Morrison's Batman run, I feel like, is a kind of perfect example of don't question it, just go with it, and you'll enjoy it. That whole kind of like from I don't know who was on Batman before Grant Morrison at that time, but whoever was on around 2006 ish, from that point on until like was it 2010, 2011 Batman Incorporated, that whole period where it was like Grant Morrison and Daniel Way, it was weird. That's when you had what was the Batman of Al Zara, or whatever he's called, colourful. Like there's so much weird stuff in that period, but if you read it all the way through, stick with it, it's such a brilliant journey, I think.
Here's the thing as well with the return of Bruce Wayne especially is like Batman had been actually dead for like a year and a half.
Mm.
Like this is back when like DC were sticking to the guns and made death stick.
Mm.
So like he'd actually been dead for a hot minute. Like people were proper questioning whether or not he was going to come back. Obviously he came back because he's Batman, he's like one of DC's biggest moneymakers. But at the time, you know, you're talking about how they're going to bring him back. He was like killed off by Darkseid, Anti-Life Equation, all that stuff. And then the way they brought him back, just incredible. It's just an inventive way to do it. Like, okay, he's actually been shot back through time.
Yeah.
And it's basically having overcome history, and it's just a sick concept. And even if you look at the cover art for it that is done by Andy Kubert for the book cover art for the full thing, it's like weird Pilgrim Batman, Batman, Pirate Batman, Caveman Batman that's wearing a giant bat head. It's incredible. It's it's amazing. I can't give it enough praise. I really like it.
That sounds like a brilliant. I was actually going to flip the question, but I don't know if you want to go into another subject. I was going to flip like what did you were like enticing to be like a good like thing, but
I reckon that's a whole other conversation, and I think we should probably save that for another week. Because that'll be another 40 minutes, I reckon. So I look forward to that. Don't get me wrong, I look forward to that. And if you're watching this, you want to hear that, stay tuned. But we will definitely do that. But yeah. I think there's too much there to go through that today. Then that's just for me personally.
That's just Dan being
hate.
Hateful, demanding.
I could do this for myself, to be honest. Exactly. You just can piss off. I'll just sit here and talk shit for now.
It's just like, you know, you go in, they go in, they use a new house, and it's just like all no, just red rum on the walls. Just look at The Shining, like
the 4S from Always Sunny. I didn't mean to come off that way.
Just babbling himself to Mike for.
The only other before we wrap this up, I just want to say the only other kind of publisher that I don't know why, because I should trust them at this point because they've been doing good stuff for years, but every time an Image comic is amazing, it's always surprising. I always get an Image comic like this looks a bit weird, the cover looks weird, the concept's weird, oh my god, that was a brilliant read. Like every single time I pick up like The Wicked and Divine or Saga or whatever Image comic you want to talk about, like, I'm always pleasantly surprised. And I don't know why, because they're really consistent. Don't get me wrong, not all Image stuff is great. There is some, especially in the 90s, there's some hits and misses. But for the most part, especially, I'd say in the last kind of 10, 15 years, Image has been absolutely stellar. It's a shame they seem to be becoming a bit more corporate, in my opinion. Like, they used to be the little guy, like the independent kind of, you know, if you didn't want to support the big companies like DC and Marvel, you'd read Image. Whereas now, I feel like they're just as big and as corporate as DC or Marvel. I mean, but they're still good talented artists and writers working for them. And they're still a great...
I'm kind of the big two is that they're willing to take risk a lot of the time with the properties that they do. And I think that's the only thing that's maybe keeping them so separate from, as you said, the kind of corporate culture that exists with all two publishers.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, the more comics they sell, the bigger they are going to get. But as long as they kind of keep to that kind of staple of being, like, risk-takers.
I kind of compare it in my head to, like, your big studio, like, game studios. Like, your big studios, like your Ubisofts and EAs. That's, like, DC, Marvel, and Image are, like, your indie games. Like, see your, like, Hotline Miami's. These kind of one-off, like, take a chance and then turn it to be brilliant, Super Meat Boy. So, these kind of games, like, that's Image.
Obviously, Image is fantastic, but one of the things I was going to say before we wrap this up, I think, because we were on top of it, Morrison, was have either of you recently read Boom Studios' Proctor Valley Road?
I've not, but I know that you've been loving it.
I didn't expect it to be nearly as good as it is. So it's Grant Morrison, it's his first original IP for about a decade. Uh-huh. It's a horror comic, and it is just amazing. The art style is fantastic. I really, really like it. It's a wee bit of a slower burn. I do say that, I think, in the reviews and stuff like that. I think it definitely follows a thing of, like, it ramps up at the end of each issue and kind of keeps going with that. So it's pretty well paced, but definitely starts off slow. And I still think if you like horror, if you like Grant Morrison, read Proctor Valley Road, because it's fantastic, in my opinion.
I do fancy it. I'll get into it, man. The artwork looks cool as well.
Yeah, it's always great as well. But yeah, I feel like that's us finished with our kind of topic of the week this week, unless, Chris, you have any final thoughts to share?
I'll zip.
Or Danny.
Again, just one last quick one. We mentioned Sicario earlier. That was written by Taylor Sheridan. Taylor Sheridan, I don't know if you know him, he was the sheriff in Sons of Anarchy. They got run over, spoilers. But he is also a writer and now a director. So he wrote Sicario and then he wrote Hell or High Water. I don't know if you've seen that. Both brilliant films.
Oh, brilliant films. Hell,
but his first directorial debut was Wind River. Which...
Oh, the one with Rainer.
Rainer. Yeah. Jeremy Renner and what's her name? Elizabeth Olsen and John Berthold. And I went in there expecting, like, something quite mediocre, and that is a knockout of the park movie. So again, I kind of see, like Image, Taylor Sheridan's one of the filmmakers that I'm always pleasantly surprised. I don't know why, because he's obviously proved himself, but then again, Without Remorse wasn't great. He wrote that. Without Remorse was a bit poor. But other than that, I think he's talented. So yeah, that'll be my last one.
Well, with that being said, if anyone has any of their own opinions about things that they thought they were going to hate but absolutely loved, leave comments below, or tweet at us, Facebook, whatever you want to do, because we have both of those things. We're at Big Glasgow Comic Page, I believe, on Facebook, and we're also at Big Glasgow Comic Page or at BGCP Comic Con on Twitter as well. So as we kind of wrap up our topic for today's episode, let's move on to the news of the week.
I don't have the jingles Ian has, and I'm not putting this one in the post. I put it in the intro in post, but I'm not putting on this one, so just pretend you heard that, right? Whoosh, exactly, whoosh, it doesn't end.
Production values definitely change depending on who's on.
If I try and do it, I'll just be an endless loop repeating for the whole episode.
There we go.
And with Ian, you get it twice. Just twice.
You get it twice, but it keeps happening. Cuts them off in the middle of a sentence. Anyway, so... this week, wow, we have a lot of angry celebrities, guys.
Oh, that's...
We have a lot of angry celebrities.
Is this the Scarlett Johansson lawsuit
The Scarlett Johansson lawsuit, but also the Emma Stone stuff, and also several other Disney actors as well.
Yeah!
Exactly, so, they're all going for them.
Big old can of worms.
Do you know more about this than I do? Do you know what's happening with this? Because I know a little bit, but if you want to maybe explain to the audience, if you've got a better understanding.
As far as I'm concerned, right, I've seen a lot of kind of talk and debate about this online, and a lot of people are like, oh, does Scarlett Johansson really need the money? She's already a millionaire. Does such and such need the money? And you're like, see, at the end of the day, right, I know these people are rich, right, they're very wealthy, but they're not Disney. They're not a huge corporate company. And see, I don't care what scenario we're in, see if it's one person taking on a big company, I'm going to root for the one person, like, every time. Do you know what I mean? That's just the way I am. But, yeah, it's fascinating, man. Basically, if you haven't heard, but I'm sure you have, Scarlett Johansson was promised a revenue percentage from the box office for Black Widow. The argument on her end is, I mean, it was, I'm totally behind her, because it was in the contract in black and white. It said, yes, we'll have an exclusive theatrical release for a reasonable amount of time before it goes to streaming.
So what it says is, I think the contract says, a guaranteed and exclusive theatrical release. So
yes.
Guaranteed.
That was a week, right? And then they put it on the Disney Plus Premium.
They put it on the Disney Plus Premium as soon as it came out.
They totally broke the rules. I mean...
Yeah, like, there was no...
It wasn't even a week period, like a week.
No, it was day off, like, because I watched, because I was supposed to go to go see it. But things happened that I missed my showing.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't go see it. There's a doggo.
There's a dog.
Yeah, he came in. He's here. Yeah, I don't know. He's just. I'm totally with her. One, because it's a huge company thing, but two, because like even the principle of the thing, like it's not the money. It's if you let this happen, if actors sit back and let this happen, the studios will continue to do it. Like they do. I think they have to put their foot down and stomp it out now. And I think, like, I know there's a lot being said about actors like going on a soapbox and like speaking for everybody because they don't want to know how the real world works. But at the end of the day, this is their job. I realise that people at Scarlett Johansson and Emma Stone, they could retire just now and be fine for the rest of their lives if they never made another film again. But this is still their job. This is their livelihood. And I think fighting for it's totally reasonable. I'm behind them, man. I mean, I do think it's opened a can of worms. I think, hopefully, studios are shitting themselves. Hopefully, they're like, oh, we better make sure this doesn't happen again, like, going forward, and hopefully it will mean change overall. But
Disney are such a large corporation, I feel like it's going to be like shoestring money that they're going to get thrown out, do you know what I mean?
I think it's going to end. I don't think it's going to go to court. I think Disney are just going to pay it and it's going to get hushed.
They'll be settled outside.
Like, and then privately they'll get told, because apparently Marvel are raging. Kevin Feige, I think he's on Scarlett Johansson's side, right? I think he's
I don't know if it was like a wee blob or anything, but the basically heads of Disney said to Kevin Feige, like, do not, we don't want Scarlett Johansson back in because she's basically having that ruckus.
Do you know what it is?
True or anything, but if that actually happens, it's like, she's one of your biggest, she was in the Avengers.
That's the other thing though, right, agreed, Scarlett Johansson's a huge draw, I think, from the audience, but she's dead now. See, would this be different if they hadn't killed her off? Would this be a case of, oh shit, we need to patch this up? Whereas now they're like, oh, she's had this whole film, we've killed her off, we've got Florence Pugh on board, let's just, do you know what I mean? Like, I wonder that way as well.
Allegedly, obviously, the thing is that more Marvel stars are also planning, like, obviously the news what come out is that Emma Stone might be considering a similar lawsuit, but also in terms of all the Marvel cast as well, allegedly a bunch of them are also going to be going forward. And well, possibly be soon, Disney, depending on what ends up happening with the, you know, future releases of Marvel films.
There's an old interview, I think it was Chris Evans, or Chris Hemsworth, it was somebody else in the Avengers that wasn't Downey Jr., right? And they were basically getting asked, the interviewer asked the question about how also Downey Jr. got paid more than anybody else, and the main reason for that was Downey Jr. didn't sign a contract for a certain amount of films. The way the other actors did. Everybody else signed a contract for 5 films, 8 films, whatever. Downey Jr. signed for Iron Man 1, and then when they wanted to do for Iron Man 2, they had to give him another contract. They wanted for Iron Man 3, another one, Avengers, you know, etc. So every time he could up his fee, and by, I think by Endgame, he got, was it $148 million, something insane, right? And somebody got asked, I think it was Chris Evans, one of them got asked, like, how do you feel about that? Like, you're a star in these films as well, you're getting, I think Chris Evans got, like, I know it's still a lot of money, but he got, like, $500,000 for the first Captain America, which in Hollywood is nothing. And then, obviously, by the end, he was getting more, but he got, and he basically just said, well, Downey Jr.'s agent did a better job than mine did.
Yeah.
Like, that was what it came down to, and I was like, that's such a real respectable thing to say.
Predicted the success of Iron Man to that degree, so hence why they didn't sign him down for like 6-8 contracts.
I also watched his advantage that he was the first. Yeah,
exactly. He just got incredibly lucky. But yeah, no, that's currently some of the biggest news in Hollywood is literally all of these Disney actors.
I will be following this, man. I'm interested to see how deep this goes. Like,
it is quite interesting, and I guess audience opinions. What do you guys think? Do you think these people are getting paid too much money? Do you think they're getting paid, you know, do you think it's within their right to go to sue?
I've always said, right, I'm somewhat of a capitalist, I've always said that the system isn't perfect, right, the system is broken, right, the fact that, you know, the gender gap and where you live, you get paid more than other places, like, the system's not perfect, right, it's not equal, but see if you can make that system work for you, that broken system work in your favour, like Scarlett Johansson's doing, go for it, I'm behind you. Do you know what I mean? Like, make your money, like, see if you can, even if it is like a kind of horrible capitalist 1984 system. If you can work that at your advantage, go for it.
So, I think with that being said, and Dan's weirdly capitalistic...
I think I'm a tourist here, man.
I know, I was going to say, you'd be ripped apart, I'll be honest. If he's listening out there, Alan...
Make your money, ScarJo.
Exactly.
Do it for the small guy.
So we'll continue with Disney news because there's obviously a few things coming out of that. We have a release date confirmed for Hawkeye.
Yes.
November 24th, I believe. So the end of this year. So very, very close and upcoming. Which is, I think, quite surprising in my opinion. I thought they'd at least push it to 2022. But
yeah.
With that being said...
There was another thing that said Hawkeye and another show. Was it Miss Marvel?
Miss Marvel.
We're both dropping by the end of the year, right?
So apparently Miss Marvel's going to be dropping towards the also towards the latter hand there, so possibly December time. Which I think I'm also excited for. I don't know a lot about Miss Marvel's character. I think she's pretty... I've only read a few comics with her in it. I think Champions was one of the ones I read. She's pretty good. I like her. This character, pretty cool. But yeah, no, I think the TV show is going to be interesting because it definitely shows a different take on the MCU. And that's the best thing I like about these TV shows is they're all different.
I think my kind of general consensus take on this, like, I'm not just blanket excited for MCU shows like I was before WandaVision. Like, before, when Disney Plus launched and I was reading about all these shows, She-Hulk and this and Captain America Winter Soldier and all this stuff, I was like, this is cool, man, all these are all going to be great. Now that we've had three of them, I realise it's going to be hit and miss. They're not all going to be great. Right. So
just because you didn't like Loki.
I did not like Loki. Loki was okay.
The finale,
I feel like you guys overhyped the finale for me a wee bit.
I love the finale.
I went in expecting something to totally alter the whole MCU. I was expecting more. I don't know. I was expecting to be like a big Shyamalan twist.
Were you just expecting a big sign that says multiverse now open?
They should have had what's his name, Peter Porker, swinging at the end and be like, "Look, you're a dick, mate." I don't know. Right? They should have had something pure like mind blowing in the Disney. He says Spawn turn up or something, and I'd be like, "Whoa!" Like, nah, just nah. It was alright.
Do you know what I mean? This is what goes.
Here's a bad guy you've never seen before that's going to be like the new Thanos. Oh, I didn't see that coming. Thanks, Marvel. Like, I don't know, it's fine. Anyway.
Variants, man.
Loki was somewhere in the middle. I loved WandaVision. I was so buzzing for Falcon and Winter Soldier. Captain America films are my shit. I love those films, especially Winter Soldier and Civil War, so I was super excited for that show, and it was so mediocre, pedestrian. I was like, it felt procedural, like it felt like a CBS show. I don't know, I thought it was meh.
I really liked it. I had problems with WandaVision. I don't know why. Like, in the beginning, I
loved WandaVision.
I think it was because I was on that kind of
train. I agree. The first few episodes were a bit of a kind of curve, but as a whole, that show's a masterpiece.
I think the finale for WandaVision is more disappointing than... It's really? The most disappointing for me, personally. Like,
because you expect Mephisto or Doctor Strange?
I was expecting more, like...
That's something else I think, though, that I prefer WandaVision for. I don't feel like, even with Loki, right, I don't think the speculation has been as hot for any of those other shows.
My thing was more...
I love that journey, like, what's going to happen? Are we going to get Mephisto? Are we going to get Doctor Strange? Oh, no, we don't. Cool. Like, that kept me buzzing.
It was all the shit with, like, Ralph Bonner and the Quicksilver thing, and then I felt a bit, like, disappointed, do you know what I mean? It was, like, anticlimactic.
I think I have
the same feeling about Loki for you.
I love Liz Olsen and Paul Bettany's chemistry in that show. I think so those two were phenomenal.
I think I have the same thing about Loki that you have WandaVision, is that I was the same thing each week. I don't know what's going to happen all that stuff, so that's why I felt the finale was fantastic. So I think we're flipped almost on those two.
Yeah, see, in Loki, I didn't really care as much what happened by the end. Whereas, like, Courtney was really struggling. She was like, is this another episode of this? And I was like, are you not enjoying it? I was like, it's okay. Whereas she's normally buy up for that stuff, and I don't know. Loki was okay. I was alright.
That's fair.
But see, back on...
At least it wasn't boring.
Is Doctor Strange in the multi thing of madness?
Multiverse
of
Madness.
That's early next year.
Do you think they're going to get all these shows, and then basically Doctor Strange is going to be the good thing that fit, like...
Apparently, the multiverse is going to be making an appearance a lot sooner than we think it will.
We're getting Spider-Man in December, Spider-Man. Right?
People believe that there's going to be loads of Spider-Men that show up in Spider-Man Far From Home. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've been following the rumours, Chrissy, but it's been... Tom Maguire, all the old villains.
Everybody.
Everyone.
All the extras that were on the bus that passed him back and was like, he looks just like my kid. That guy, he's back.
The guy's like 40 years old. He's like, aye, just looks that massive.
They've dug up Stan Lee. No, that's too far. I'm sorry.
R.I.P.
I always have to take it too far, man.
You always do. So look forward to Spider-Man Far From Home featuring the corpse.
Stanley's corpse.
That would get people in seats. That was a tackle.
It really would.
Probably still funnier than Chris Pratt, to be fair.
Right, anyway. Stanley's rotten corpse aside, speaking of films, I don't know if I'm going to segue at this one.
cut the blood to next.
I guess we got a Shang-Chi teaser this week. We got that this week. Mm-hmm. Bit weird, topless Shang-Chi. Awkwafina comment on the fact he was topless. Where's your shotgun?
To be fair, that guy looks great. And the other trailer where he had his shirt on, it was kind of hard to tell what kind of shape he was in. I was like, oh, that guy's at the gym, man.
Simon Liu, I think his name is.
He's
the name of the Shang-Chi actor.
He looks the part, man.
I'm still excited for Shang-Chi.
Me too.
I don't know how it's going to fit into the wider implications. I mean, Wong's in it, I guess, so it's an abomination. Also, we got, I guess, in the teaser trailer, we got more of the Mandarin and the weird powers of the Ten Rings, because...
Yeah.
They're not as, like, one ring has each power as they are in the comics. I think it's like all 10 generally just have abilities.
I think Wong and Abomination will be cameos. I don't see them being in it for more than 10 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think so.
See, that's one guy that I know nothing about. It's like the Guardians of the Galaxy. I never read the comics when I was young. I was always more the DC side, so all the kind of... I don't even know if he's like a major player in the Marvel.
Shang-Chi, yeah, he's pretty... In the early days, but they kind of dropped him because it was quite racist. Yeah, like, it was drawn in the 60s and 70s, and it was all very, like, 60s and 70s. It's not aged well.
Oh, really?
So I think that's why kind of the Marvel comics have kind of...
They brought him back recently in 2020 or 2021. They brought him back for a six-issue limited miniseries that I've heard only good things about.
Right.
That redone his origin and all that, and has had him redo. And obviously they do that all the time with Marvel and... When a TV show has been, or a movie or TV show, but the more character has been released, where they reintroduce them in the comics. He's an interesting character, and he was probably more for what he was. Well, originally, he was supposed to be. He was more martial arty and more on that side of the MCU or Marvel in general than Iron Fist was.
Yeah,
because Iron Fist is just a white dude who knows martial arts, whereas Shang-Chi is an actual Asian guy who.
What I also like to look off from that trailer, from all the trailers we've seen. Shang-Chi and what's his name, Iron Fist. They guys are supposed to be like everybody in MCU can fight, really.
The masters of martial arts.
But those two are like 10 leagues above everybody else. Whereas when you watched, was it the Defenders? Iron Fist didn't feel any more like adept than Luke Cage or Jessica Jones or Daredevil. Like everybody just felt the same kind of level.
I feel like missed the trick with that.
Whereas in the trailer for Shang-Chi, like he's doing stuff that we've not seen MD and MCU do so far in terms of like kung fu moves and stuff. And you're like, oh, this guy's.
So is that he's not superhuman? Like.
But the rings kind of make him more. I assume he's going to get the rings by the end of the film, which are going to make him more.
Exactly, going to make him more powerful. But he's also pretty cool. Do you know what I mean? Like as a character, just like I love a good kung fu martial arts movie.
It looks very kind of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
I mean that kind of thing, and I'm very hyped for that.
Yeah.
And the teaser definitely, other than maybe the weird Awkwafina shirtless thing.
I'm not a fan of Awkwafina particularly.
I like her, but I just felt like it was out of place for the rest of the trailer. Like, I thought, it's a funny movie as well. I'm like, okay, we know it's going to be an MCU film. It's going to have some comedy.
Yeah. It gave me, it took me back to the Letitia Wright saying, "What are those?" in Black Panther. That horribly dated meme that they referenced.
We love Shuri.
I love Shuri too, but that line was horrible.
Yeah, I feel like Awkwafina as well, character's probably going to be fantastic as well, but again, it's like, oh well, okay, the lines are okay, but what are you going to do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who's the director? Is it a new guy? Is it a new director, or is it like a...
I don't remember.
Let's have a look.
Chloe Zhao's doing Eternals, but I don't know who's doing Shang-Chi.
Shang-Chi's director is Destin Daniel Cretton.
Right. I don't know his work.
He has done, I don't know, I'm just looking at his films, I've not really seen any of them.
See, there are a lot of shorts, and I just googled them there. It's quite a lot of shorts.
I spoke about this before with Marvel. I like the fact they get both directors and actors aren't necessarily this guy's playing Shang-Chi, like, everybody's only got. Whether this is good for the guy's career or not, I don't know. But for Disney, for Marvel, and for branding reasons, everybody's going to look at that guy and go, that's Shang-Chi. That's what you want. You don't want somebody going, oh, that's The Rock, who also plays Black Adam. Do you know what I mean? You want to see, oh, that's... Like, at this point, Chris Evans, even though he's done, and even though he's done other great work, he's still Captain America. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what Disney want, and I think that's why they're kind of going with this kind of route of casting. And I think it's working, man. It's cool. And it gives smaller actors a chance to, like, I mean, I think Miss Marvel's an unknown, right? I don't think that girl's ever really done anything. That's cool, man. I'm behind that. As long as it's good.
That's
the
caveat. If it's shit, you'll hear about it.
Yeah. If it's shit, then they should have cast something massive. I'll totally just do a 180
U-turn. The Rock as Miss Marvel.
He can do it.
I think he's got enough acting range. Jesus Christ. Speaking of casting and recasting and different characters. Apparently, J.K. Simmons is in return as Commissioner Gordon for the HBO Batgirl TV show that is due to come out.
The one atrocity of both Justice League films was that we didn't get enough J.K. Simmons as Commissioner Gordon. Yeah. Like, that was such a good call. So the fact we're getting more, hell yeah, man. Let's see J.K. Simmons do this thing. I love that guy.
And I actually have high hopes for the back, because we got our Batgirl casting last week. Who the girl who got cast as her
from In the Heights
is from In the Heights.
Yes.
And I actually really, I went to see that film recently with my girlfriend, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. She's really of course she didn't.
You don't need to see this anymore. Like
the master's dad.
I love Hamilton, but In the Heights not for me.
She was pretty good in it. Good character, good overall kind of performance, and I feel like if she's given a good script, and then we know that Joss Whedon is no longer involved in the film, so it's not going to be any creepy sexualized stuff, so that's always positive. That if she's given a good
script, I hear about him, man. Well, stop talking about him. I just hate that guy.
We're giving him. We shouldn't be giving him any press.
It's the worst.
If she gets a good script, it'll be spot on, in my opinion. I think it'll be a fantastic show. And I feel like I'm interested to see what they do with the character of, I believe, I don't know if it is necessarily Barbara Gordon. I think they probably will do Barbara Gordon, but
yeah.
I don't know if they, you know, they're going to be doing someone else or do a different
take. Do you know what? I can't be worse than the Ruby Rose TV show at this point.
That's what I was
going to
bring up.
Let's just do this, because it will be better.
It's not Batwoman, so it's
yeah,
like,
you
it's
go.
Yeah, true.
Because everyone loves Barbara Gordon.
I gave that show a shot, and I couldn't get past the first 10 minutes.
I have a love hate relationship with CW shows.
Yeah, I checked out after like episode 2 of Arrow. I can watch 2 Arrow and 1 Flash and some Gotham, and I was like, that's
still,
plenty.
I still watch Legend of Tomorrow. I'm still up to date on that, but it's the only one I'm up to date on. I enjoy that. Speaking of Batgirl. I don't know if people know this. Well, you guys probably do, but for the wider audience, we're kind of Glasgow-based, we're Scottish-based kind of podcast, and recently our streets have been overtaken by the Bat.
See, for a multi-millionaire genius guy, how come he doesn't know how to drive the right way in the motorway? Did you see him driving the wrong way out of the Kingston Bridge? What are you doing, big man? There's arrows all the way up that bloody flyover. Like, what's that all about? You've got us Bat Vision tech, but you can't see the big arrows that are pointing that way. You're funny.
It's the fucking number 2 going to fucking, I don't know, Carlisle. Just like number 2 to fucking Bishop Briggs going down the opposite way.
Oh,
is that Batman?
I don't know. My door's in the bus. That's your Batman!
No,
but mate, your bikes are shite.
Get your change. But yeah, no, the Batman has taken over the streets of Glasgow, and with that, we've also seen some weird, like, foot, like kind of prop footage, kind of prop stuff, and we got a weird photo screenshot from one of the a newspaper article or newspaper clipping that was like saw it's like going to be used in the film that confirms that I believe the Keaton verse. I believe it's supposed to be the Batman that one, right? It's the Michael Keaton.
Yeah,
one is what it's referenced to. Mm-hmm. Is that there is a Superman in that universe?
No. No. The Superman thing is Matt Reeves' Pattinson Batman.
What's this one then? Because I remember there was two things. So what's this one? Is that what that's related to?
I need to open what you're sending.
Let's have a look.
Wait, that's a Google Doc. Wait, what are you sending me, Matt?
Hang on, it should be there. Hang on.
But I know, like, there is a back. Is it Superwoman, though? It's a Superwoman, it's not a Superman, I think, in the Keaton one. I may be getting this completely wrong.
The one?
Yeah, no, I believe you're right. I know, so is that from the Matt Reeves one?
I don't know.
I still don't have anything. My thing is, the newspaper clip, pretty sure it's to the Matt Reeves Batman, right? But the problem is, with that, I've said 4 years, right, I've said since Avengers came out, DC should not try and copy Marvel. DC should just
do its own thing. Right.
Here, Matt Reeves, make your film. Todd Phillips, you make your film. Like, David Ayer, like, don't force him to tie Suicide Squad. And it might have been good if they just said, David, make a Suicide Squad film. Doesn't need to be connected. You can kill whoever you want. David, like, just make them all independent, individual projects. I really think that they've kind of learned that, because now, like, nothing's connected, like, especially after watching Suicide Squad, like, James Gunn, nothing's really connected anymore at this point, so that's better, it's so much more freeing, I think, and it results in better films. The one thing about that Superman clipping, although it's always cool to have Superman in a Batman story, I think, that's personally... Mass, you might not like to send us. That's what that's my favourite Superman as a side character in the Batman story. That's where I always feel like Superman shines the most.
I think, like, it happened as well within, like, the Arkham games. Like, the talk of it.
Yeah,
it was good just to even have that.
Yeah, but that's it. They don't necessarily need to bring him in. Just let us know that he exists.
I'm excited for both the Flash film and also the Batman Reeves one as well.
I'm more excited for Batman personally.
I am more excited for that one, but I'm still excited for both of them. Kind of
because, but do you know why? It's because the Flash is tied to the DCU. More excited for Batman. I agree. I don't know. I think it will at this point, but you still get Ezra Miller. Batfleck.
It's Batfleck. I believe he's.
It's Batfleck's Batman, but I don't think Ben Affleck's actually in it. Like, I think.
Oh, is it not? I thought he was.
I don't know. Maybe I'm totally wrong.
But at least we're getting the weird Keaton Batman as well, which I think is quite good. But in general, our streets have basically been accosted over the past few months by Indiana Jones and also Batman, which sounds like the best crossover film that we'll see.
Oh, those Scottish tax laws.
Oh, our lovely architecture and buildings that all look lovely.
Nah, it's a tax dodge. It's Hollywood. let's be cynical here.
Yeah. That's I like to think they come for the beautiful architecture that reminds them of
Gotham. You keep telling yourself that.
Wait, why else would Batman be cutting about in the Necropolis?
No, but let's go back on the point of, like, the DC by them, like, solo movies. Like, they've learnt that from Joker. I think that earned $1 billion.
Yeah.
So see if they do that with the Matt Reeves movie, that would earn the exact same.
And I also think, see if they just let Zack Snyder make his own kind of Justice trilogy and not have to set up other films, like, just here, make 3 films and tell the story of Batman and Superman. Like, that would have been interesting, I think, better than what we got. I don't know. It doesn't matter now, because it's all been said and done, and as I said, it seems like they're kind of learning a lesson over time, but, yeah.
I think...
It's been
20
years.
Yeah, it's a better part of almost 15 years, 20 years. But,
and millions and millions of dollars.
millions and millions of dollars are failures. I think... Well, Dan, I think the last bit of news we should discuss this week, it's got to be Abandoned.
Oh, listen. Oh,
it's got to be right. Abandoned, big man.
Right.
No,
Chrissy, you don't have any context, right?
I dropped that one.
Do you know what's going on here, Chrissy?
No,
Abandoned.
No.
Right, okay. So there's, I'll link you the video later, right, to blow your mind, that we did a couple of weeks ago.
The highest viewed video on the YouTube,
yes,
of the podcast.
I'm going to cut this and put it up to see if we can do that again, because it's the only video that's done well. So yeah, the guys behind this at this point, there's one of two things happening. Either this is without a doubt Hideo Kojima is behind this, or they know that all this hype is happening and they're promoting their game based on that. There's no way this is a coincidence, put it that way. It's either the real guy, or it's them pretending to be him. The thing about that second option, though, is I just hope they're prepared for the backlash. Like, I realise this is free publicity for their game. This is hype.
That'd be hell to pay, though.
Yeah. Like, see if this just turns out to be some indie horror game. People in general are going to absolutely shun this game, and it's going to get like boycotted, and it's going to be a shit show. So I hope that they're ready for the consequences of that, but... Do you know what? I do kind of respect the balls. Like, see if it is just two wee guys in the basement being like, that's kind of work, Kojima. That's pretty ballsy.
did they mention that, or is it just speculation?
Like, there's this game coming out, Chrissy, right, called Abandoned, right? A quick recap, if you don't know. This game is coming out called Abandoned. It's a PS5 exclusive horror game, right? Mm. There are so many coincidences and connections and hints that this is actually Silent Hills. Remember, Kojima was making the Silent Hills game that was cancelled.
PT stuff. Yeah.
All sorts of connections between. You can read the full article. I'll link it below. But it's between Norman Reedus. It's between Sony. It's got so many layers to it, right? The guy behind this game is called Hassan Karaman. So HK, same initials as Kojima. If you translate Karaman to Turkish, it comes out as Kojima. Hassan comes out as Hideo? Something like that. It translates to his name. That's the tip of the iceberg, right? There's tons of connections. There's a bit in the trailer that the letters, there's something written on the wall, and the letters covered by PT.
You've obviously seen Always Sunny in Philadelphia. You know when Charlie has...
Charlie's getting whiteboards. Carol! Carol!
Connecting!
There is no Pepe Sylvia! Yeah, that part.
That was Dan for about 30 minutes on a gaming episode.
Carol! But listen, even when we made that video, right, I was playing it up. I was kidding on that. I was like tinfoil hat and all that, right? I was playing it up a wee bit, and in the back of my mind, I was like, this is probably going to turn out to be bullshit, right? But after they shared that photo, basically, Chris, they shared this photo on Twitter. It was a blurred image, right? It said abandoned and very clear text. Above that, there was blurred out text, and the image in the background was blurred, and it was a guy's face that had an eye patch, like Solid Snake from Metal Gear.
So people have also been speculating it's a Metal Gear Solid game.
Well, what I now might think, this is another out of the left field theory, right? And I kind of hope this one isn't true. What if this is Konami trying to recreate what Kojima did with Metal Gear 5? What if it's nothing to do with Kojima, but it's Konami going, oh, that worked last time when he done it, let's try and copy it?
No, that can't happen. That would destroy their company, man.
Here's an even bigger one, right? What if Abandoned isn't just Silent Hills? Abandoned is Kojima, a new project from Kojima that is incorporating all the games that he came from that have been abandoned. So it is also Metal Gear. He's doing Silent Hill and he's doing Metal Gear because he was abandoned. That was a bit of a stretch. I don't have anything to back up. But what are we here for, speculation? But really, truthfully, at the end of the day, I think it comes down to two things. Either this is Kojima doing what he did before and doing this weird cryptic reveal, or it's two fucking random dudes in a basement just riding hype train. I think it's one or the other.
And dear viewer, you've heard it here first if it's either of those things.
Well, the 10th of August, we're getting a review, so all will be revealed in a week's time. But do you know what? See, at the end of the day, somebody said this on a Reddit comment, this whole, like, speculation hype train has been better than E3. See, like, yeah. EC 2021, not as good as this has been. This has been so much more interesting and fascinating. And that's the thing, see, I don't think I can be too disappointed regardless of what this is. Hopefully, obviously, I hope it's a Kojima thing, because I'm a Kojima stan. But see if it is just these random guys taking the piss, or see if it is even Konami, who are scum. It's been a fun ride. Like, I've enjoyed myself. I've got my kicks.
There you go, that's it. Well, I believe that's us pretty much finished up with the news for the week.
Um, should we quickly go over what we've been watching and what we've been reading and what we've been consuming?
It's up to you guys. We can hit that out. Go for it, Dan.
Right, okay, well, a few things. Last night, this is just off the cuff, last night I started watching IT Crowd again. What a show, that still holds up. Anyway, did any of you watch the Space Jam sequel?
I've
never been one of the guys that's like, oh, they ruined my childhood, like, see when the Ghostbusters film came out and all these, like, I was like, shut up, you've still got the original, don't, shut your face, right?
Completely erase everybody's distance.
But my God, if I've never seen a legacy shat on as much as this in my life.
I
went back and rewatched the first Space Jam, right? It's not a good film, right? It's nostalgia.
It's fun. But
there's something to it. There's a creativity. There's a talent behind it. It's not totally phoned in. This sequel is one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. Like, it's up there in movie 43. It's so, so poor. But it's not even fun. At least movie 43 was fun, like, in a bad way. It's not even that. It's just, don't watch it. Like, this is the one time I was, because normally I'm like, I don't like it, make up your own mind. So if you grew up with the first Space Jam, do not watch this. It will, it's horrible. It's an atrocity.
Well, Chris, so, what have you been
doing? I'm going to get to Suicide Squad, but I'll let you go over yours first.
The one thing that I actually just finished watching it, like, I've been kind of spacing it out, enjoying myself, but it was Invincible.
Dan doesn't like that either.
No. I thought that was a really interesting, like, story. Like, it's a guy.
Have you read it, Chris?
Original take on story. I've read the story, like, there. I think it came out in 2003, the original.
Yeah.
Comic. So it's like a long time coming. But it's kind of Massimo, you probably, because it's kind of tailored to Superman. The same kind of.
I really was a big fan of Invincible. I remember reading the omnibus. I've got the omnibus somewhere around here as well. Mm-hmm. When I was like 15, 16 years old, and I really liked it. And I also really enjoyed the TV show as well.
I did not expect that fucking ending. Yeah. Even though you've read the book, you're like, they're not going to go that fucking.
It's
going to be trimmed down a bit.
I read the comics years ago, and I liked the comics. I'm not going to go into this too much, because I've waxed lyrical about it in past episodes.
He doesn't like Invincible.
He fucking hates it.
I read the comic years ago, and I did like the comic. I read it because I liked The Walking Dead and Robert Kirkman. That's why I read Invincible. Yeah. And I was into it, right? I was like, this is all right. I couldn't really stick with it. I read, I think, the first two volumes, and I was like, I get it. Do you know what I mean? I was one of the ones I was like, I'll read more of this one day. Like, I'll get back to it. I never have since. But I'll get right now. And then the show came out, and I wasn't fussed about it, because this is going to sound super narrow-minded. It was animated. That immediately put me off. But the cast put me on. I was like, what a brilliant cast. Sandra Oh, like, Steven Yeun, what a phenomenal cast, right? I was buzzing for that. And then, but I still didn't watch it. And then you guys spoke about it on this, you and Ian and our folk, Alan, and really were buzzing about it and really, really hyped it up. And were like, oh, it's so extreme. It's brutal. It's this, it's that.
Because it was.
It was fantastic.
Nah, it was fucking brutal, mate. I
wanted his
head through a train and killed a bunch of people. Like,
it doesn't hit in that animated style. I don't think it doesn't have the same impact.
Desensitized, Dan.
Yeah, maybe I am. It felt like Happy Tree Friends. Do you know what I mean? I didn't feel like disturbing. It was like, ha! Like, that's not what they're going for, but that's what it got me to do.
What would you give out of 10 then? Despite Dad's scary criticism.
I would give it a good... just by Dad's criticism, I might give it like a 7. But
Don't let me skew you. I am a grumpy old man. Don't let my opinion affect you.
I was saying 8, because I thought it's not the best thing.
Best, but it's still
great. It's above average, and it's like...
Again, above, and I know that I'm in the minority here.
I'll be like a 3 or a 1.
Yeah, it was.
I honestly don't even think I could rate it, because I wasn't invested enough. Does that make sense? Like, I wouldn't feel fair for me to rate it, because although I realise this is probably a really well-made show, the voice talent is incredible. I wouldn't want to rate it low, because I know that stuff is good. It just wasn't for me. Do you know what I mean?
I definitely stuck with an 8. I think there's definitely some parts of it that can definitely be improved with second season. But I think Invincible overall was pretty good. In terms of myself, see, I've not been watching that much nerdy stuff recently. Mm. Probably other than Black Widow a few weeks ago. That's about it, obviously. we whacked Lyrigo about Loki every single week it was on. I've been watching a show. It's on Apple TV. Ooh. It's called Ted Lasso.
Oh, I've heard good things about that, man.
And it is. I think it's fantastic. It's not. It's like, you know, it's got Jason Sudeikis in it, right?
Obviously, yeah.
Saturday Night Live alumni. We're the Millers, Horror Bosses.
He's in All of a Sudden in Philadelphia as well. For a few episodes.
Even better. But it's such a really. It's a very heartwarming show. It's like a drama. It's like, I'd say dramedy, but it's not really. But it's nice. It's a good show, and I feel like it's one of those things that. In the times of that we're living in now, where we're kind of basically in the darkest timeline, I actually do it. I think it's a nice wee like, kind of ray of sunshine on that into the general TV landscape that we've got recently of pretty heavy horror shows or heavy action shows or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just a show about a guy trying to coach a football team and does terribly at it, but also at the same time brings towards the community, and it's actually really fun and really enjoyable. And it's set in London. But
right, I see it's set in... Is he English in it?
No, he's American.
Right.
But he's an American football coach that's been hired to coach a football team.
Okay.
So, like, American football, not soccer.
Sure.
But like, hired to teach an actual football team that's
right.
Basically like a mixture between, like, London clubs like Crystal Palace and all that kind of stuff for folks who watch football. They just have, it's a fake club, but it doesn't exist.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a really fun show, and it's some of the best, I think, writing it for a comedy series that I've, like, heard in a week.
All I've seen of it is the wee thumbnail when I got my PlayStation. That's just him holding the ball. Like, that's as much as I know about it.
It's really good. That I think you might like it. You might not. You might absolutely hate it and destroy my heart in the pieces. But that's what I'm going to be watching. I think anyone who likes a nice wee heartwarming show, enjoy that.
Okay. So Suicide Squad came out this weekend. Came out Friday. I went in expecting to really not enjoy it. And I came away going, that was okay. So I guess in a way I was pleasantly surprised. Like we said earlier, how we weren't going to include movies that you did that with.
Then, right?
But yeah, right. That's the start of the episode. Okay. So for the first, let's say the first 4/5 of the film, it was standard James Gunn, also quirky humour. Violent thingy doing her whole Harley Quinn thing, Margot Robbie doing her whole, you know, her shtick that she does, Harley Quinn, that we've all kind of sick of at this point, we've seen before. But Jesus, it's better than Birds of Prey, let me just say so it was fine up until the last fifth of the film, and I won't spoil too much what happens. I think we all know Starro's in it. Starro comes into it at the last fifth of the film, and I nearly checked out. I nearly walked out the cinema. I really struggled.
Really? It took it to another level, like quite extreme.
Listen, everybody, Alan, again, I would piss off Alan Todd if he's listening, because I know that everybody always says, listen, these are superhero stories, they're meant to be dumb, like big pink starfish and guys in tights, like it's supposed to be dumb. But, yes, I don't know, there's a level. There's some things that don't translate to the screen, I don't think. That's my problem a lot of the time with Guardians as well, to be fair, so maybe it's a James Gunn thing. That last section I've really struggled with. But overall, listen, it's better than the AR version. It's better than the 2016 version, which I didn't think I would say. It's still a bit naff. Like, I thought, when I seen the suits in the trailers and in the posters, I was like, oh, the suits look naff, but in the film they'll kind of work because they'll, like, kind of make jokes about it, but also you've seen the trailer, you make a joke about him wearing a toilet seat instead. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, they're going to take the piss with these costumes. They don't really, they just wear dumb costumes. They don't really explain it, they don't really joke about it, they just look dumb, just naff costumes. And I'm like, oh, that's really funny, James Gunn. Like, I don't know, I just, some of that stuff doesn't land for me.
Really funny, Mr. Gunn.
Yeah, like, I don't know. And then, listen, I'm not going to lie, man, there was a scene at the start that really messed me up. Can I give you PTSD? So, you've probably seen it in the trailer. Is it Mongul, the mad orange chick?
Yeah, Mongal.
She's holding on to a chopper. I think you've seen this in the trailer. Oh. And the chopper's kind of spinning out of control. So, the chopper crashes into, like, this pool of water. They're on a beach, right? And it's, like, nighttime. And this chopper crashes into a pool of water. It really reminded me, this is really dark, so if you're listening here, brace yourself, right, this is extremely, this isn't funny, this is really dark. And I think it wasn't that long ago, I think it was 1989, I want to say, they made a Twilight Zone movie. Don't know if you guys seen it. I don't think it was great. I know John Lithgow was in it, I'm pretty sure. They made a Twilight Zone film, and a horrific on-set accident happened where the guy, I don't remember the actor's name, he had two Vietnamese kids under his arms. He was in Vietnam in the scene, and he was running across this pool where explosions were going off, and then there was a prop helicopter that was meant to fall beside them. Instead of falling beside them, it fell directly onto them, and the blades of the helicopter totally went through two children and this actor. It is one of the most horrific pieces of footage I've ever seen. It's on YouTube. It's from a behind the scenes camera. It's not like a high HD camera, but you can see what's happening. Do you know what I mean? You see this guy running across with two kids under his arms, this chopper falls, and then you see like two parts of a body float in the water. That's really, really rough, man. It's really bad. And that scene in Suicide Squad really reminded me of it. So I was like, oh, well, that's a nice spot. I'm enjoying this silly superhero film. I'm thinking about dead children. That's nice. Oh,
Jesus.
Yeah. And then, do you know what's even weirder? They still released the movie with him in it. They just wrote his death into the movie.
Oh.
Yeah. The kids, to be fair, they took, about respect, they took the kids out of the film there, and all their scenes were cut, but the actor himself, he's still in the movie. Yeah, really weird, man.
By the way, directed by John Landis.
Directed by John Landis, who also
violated Carol Fuller's child labour laws by hiring the two kids.
Yes, yes he did, but guess what, it was Vietnam, so they weren't white kids, so it's fine, because it was that era, and yeah, how horrific is that? That is the worst thing I've ever heard. And then we all know about his son, Landis's son, and how much of a beast he is.
Yeah.
So... yeah, not great. Not a great story. Not a great thing to think about when you're watching Suicide Squad.
Anyway.
But then when you're watching, you're thinking, dead children, yeah! You're welcome.
So, on that horrifying note, I guess.
I'm sorry, that's where my mind went. I don't know what to tell you. I probably need therapy. I just.
Thanks for listening to BGCP Disassembled. The official podcast, well, probably not much for longer after that, on the Big Glasgow Comic page. I've been joined by Dan.
I'm sorry, America.
And the first appearance and maybe last appearance of Chrissy. I don't know if it was used to us.
It's a very dark ending.
I've been Massimo. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at BGCP Comic Con, I think. Also, BGCP Disassembled as well is also on Facebook. BGCP Disassembled Podcast is a group that you can join as well as the BGCP Disassembled kind of podcast group. We also have the main Big Glasgow Comic page, Facebook, and also I believe we have the BGCP Comic Con on Twitter and also on Instagram. Thank you for listening. If you guys have any thoughts on the topic that we had today about the films that you thought were going to be terrible but actually turned out to be great, please leave them in the comments below and share this to people. Hopefully they'll like this. Hopefully they'll find dark stuff as funny as us. And I really don't know where to go here, Dan, I'll be honest.
Have a nice week, and if you decide to watch that video, good luck sleeping tonight.
Exactly. So think of us when you think of Suicide Squad. Anyway, everyone, enjoy your week.
Thank you for listening to Disassembled. You can find more news and reviews on BigGlasgowComicPage.com. And don't forget, you can also find us on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube as BGCP Comic Con. Make sure you also subscribe on the podcast provider of choice for new episodes every week.